Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Yes, indeed. Welcome on into our Friday, April 4th edition of Sports Talk. Going to 6 p.m. this evening, then we get ready for Game 2, LSU baseball, taking on Oklahoma. First pitch at 6:30 over on AMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Last night in Oklahoma, it was Mr. Anderson on the mound mowing him down.
This time, a called strike three. That time got the corner, did Anderson. That time he went for a fastball low and away and a swing and a miss by Branch and a big punch out for Kate Anderson. Anderson already gave up a base on balls there in the bottom of the first inning to go along with those three strikeouts. There's a swing and a miss. Give him four. There's a swing and a miss. Hernandez dropped the ball. He'll have to pick it up, throw down to first, and does so to Jones in time for the second out. So that's strikeout number five now for Anderson. 0-2 from Anderson. Off speed. Swing and a miss. Anderson fires, swing and a miss, got him to chase up and out. And Anderson with another huge punch out.
Nice.
Called strike three. Anderson with a 2-2 count, painted the outside corner. Dickerson down on strikes. 48 hours. There's a swing and a miss, and Kate Anderson records yet another punch out, his ninth of the night. Here's a swing and a miss. That'll be a strikeout for Anderson. Got him again. Three straight breaking balls. Here's the 1-2 from Anderson. Swing and a miss. Hernandez held on to the foul tip. And Kate Anderson with strikeout number 11. Anderson's 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. The fastball finds the hole in the bat of Dickerson. There's a swing and a miss. A pitch. Fastball up and in. And Harris couldn't stay away. And Kate Anderson now with 13 punch-outs tonight. Two gone. The 1-2. Swing and a miss with a breaking ball. Ring him up. That is strikeout number 14 for Kate Anderson.
He was dealing. Kate Anderson ends up with 14 Ks, pitching a complete inning shutout for the Bayou Bengals, taking down Oklahoma 2-0 in the series opener. Great start for the LSU Tigers.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't sure if that was ever going to end.
It just kept going and going.
You know, baseball is funny because, like, a starting pitcher, how much impact can one starting pitcher have on a season or a team? They don't pitch every day. Well, something about just having that ace that you know, hey, you know, things can be going poorly. You might not be swinging the bat all that well. They only put up two runs, but you can just put him out there and be like, all right.
He's got our back.
If we put a crooked number up there,
yeah,
we got a pretty good chance. I mean, to go, there's only 27 outs in a baseball game. Like, to go on the road and strike out 14 dudes, that's just different. You know, that's Paul Skeens. Did Skeens ever have 14 strikeouts in a game? I'm not even sure.
I'm sure we'll get our master of stats to get on it. Charlie will look that up and let us know. I'm sure Skeens, though, did have a 14K outing.
I'm sure he got up there several. I mean, right. that's a lot of strikeouts. So I'm sure Charlie will let us know by the end. But, yeah, I mean.
I think he was the last one to throw a complete game for LSU baseball.
That would make sense. That would
yes.
make sense.
And yes, so Skeens had a ton of double-digit strikeout performances. His max was 15.
Okay.
He did it against Auburn. But as far as complete game shutout, Skeens didn't do that. He pitched a complete game, but he gave up two runs against Tulane in that matchup in the regional back in June of 2023. So he was the last pitcher to do a complete game. And then they said A.J. Labus was the last one to do a complete game shutout. Wow. That was back
that
in like 2018.
Yeah.
And then the last one to do a complete game shutout, I listened to Joe Healy in the D1 Baseball podcast earlier today, to do a complete game shutout against an SEC opponent goes back to Alex Lang in 2017. Mm. So Cade Anderson, looks some very interesting company there. Just a fantastic performance, guys.
What was great, you know, too, Charlie, most of the hype of pitching going into this game was around Kyson Witherspoon.
And that's why I don't think that it's really on the LSU bats, because with only scoring two runs, it was a pitcher's duel. I mean, two elite arms in the SEC going at it. Cade Anderson was just better. You know, and apparently there were a bunch of scouts in the stands last night, too.
Sure,
to get eyes on both guys.
I believe it.
And then Cade Anderson going 935 pitches, 14 strikeouts. And guys, don't forget, he retired the last 12 and 15 of the last 16 batters he faced in that game.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, six innings, two runs against LSU's lineup. Like, that's a pretty strong day to come away with a loss in that game. That's gotta feel rough for Oklahoma.
The ball was definitely not flying out the park yesterday. The chilly kind of temps, I guess you would say, in Oklahoma, plus they were dealing with some rain. Looks like we're going to be kind of that same atmosphere for Game 2's matchup. I know it was raining earlier today. By time it's game time over in Oklahoma, that should have subsided, and I'm more curious to see what the field is more like. But I don't expect the Tigers bats to be launching them out the park in Oklahoma, or the Sooners to be doing that either, with the another like 54 game time temperatures to be around.
Yeah, this is the time of year where it's like you can get a thunderstorm. I mean, in Louisiana at least, you get a thunderstorm at any point. So yeah, I mean, a lot more Thursday series this year. Yeah, we were just talking about that. Like, hey, Thursday, all of a sudden you got a baseball game, and the series is over by Saturday. It's just kind of a weird thing, but that's just, you know, get them on TV, right?
For sure. And Jay Johnson mentioned that for the LSU Tigers, the fact that the networks want them in prime time. So he's like, well, we'll take the Thursday series. That's fine by us. LSU, you know, lost their first road series in SEC play at Texas. Now have a chance to get the series victory this evening with a victory in Game 2. And we'll see what obviously can happen in Game 3 on Saturday. Saturday. I'm getting lost with all my times and games here right now, because I know game time Saturday, we're going to be thinking about the Final Four in the NCAA tournament, which is going to be on WWL as well. Looking forward to seeing these matchups and bunch of ones going at it. And I think this was a year where we saw that those top seeds were just so dominant and seemed to have that easier path to this Final Four this season. Hoping that's not the case going forward, because the tournament is so much fun. But I worry that, you know, come this NIL era, we're going to see more of these blue bloods, these top seeds being so dominant come tournament time.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is, right? I mean, where, as a mid-major, if you have a player who you feel like can dominate in the tournament, you know, he's probably going to be on
someone else's roster
next year. I mean, you look at this tournament. Remember that Florida Atlantic team that went to the Final Four?
Yeah.
Right? You remember that team? Everyone was excited about that team. Well, you look at this year's tournament. Who are the teams that won a bunch of games? Like, Arkansas had one of the only upsets. Who was their point guard? It was John L. Davis, who was the point guard on that Florida Atlantic team. Michigan, they had those 2 7-footers. Well, one of them was that Golden kid who was on Florida Atlantic. He went over to Michigan, and I think they went to the Sweet 16. And they lost. I can't recall who they lost to. But, when you look over at Florida, their shooting guard, he's a kid off that Florida Atlantic team. So, that's just what happens. Like, oh, look how good this team was. Now every piece of it's like, hey, we'll give you a bunch of money. Come over here and play with us. UConn, they just picked up the transfer from Georgia, their star point guard there. So they're going to reload and try to do it again. You know, he's 6'5". He's averaging 20 points a game. Like, even the mid-level teams in these conferences, that would come in as a 9-10 seed and maybe upset a few, you know, one seed in the second round. Their star players are getting picked off those rosters. So I don't think there's any coincidence about it that there happens to be 4-1 seeds. And even in the final four, I mean, you're looking at twos and threes. So I think the men's NCAA tournament is going to become more and more like the women's NCAA tournament, where you just see chalk, 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 chalk. And, you know, folks like you who like to be known as Chalk Steve suddenly...
This year for sure.
Suddenly not only have the nickname, but also the bracket to back it up.
Yes, sir. Looking forward to talking more NCAA college basketball action with Cameron Salerno. He writes for CBS Sports. He'll be joining us at 5:25. First up, though, this hour, we'll get to a little bit of NFL draft talk. Eric Edholm, the lead draft writer for NFL Media, will join us, breaking down the latest buzz. We're just 3 weeks out from things kicking off the draft in Green Bay this year. Will be fun to see that. And obviously the Saints have the 9th overall pick currently in round one, plus 8 other selections in this draft. We'll get into some of that with Eric Edholm in this hour. Like I said, 4:35 will be joining us. And then 6 o'clock pregame coverage, LSU baseball game 2 against Oklahoma, a 6:30 first pitch. Keep it all locked right here as we get ready to bring you the latest and greatest. Black and gold, LSU, and even Pelicans are at the LA Lakers house tonight. We'll talk a little bit about that. Coming back with more of Sports Talk, though, right after this on WWL. Yes, indeed. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Reminding you, WWL is your home for LSU baseball. Next up for the Tigers, game 2 against the Sooners in Oklahoma. Pre-game coverage right here at 6 o'clock. First pitch, 6:30. WWLAMFM.com and the free Odyssey app. We are gearing up also. NCAA Final Four action will be on WWL tomorrow. We'll be talking more about the Final Four at the 5 o'clock hour when Cameron Salerno from CBS Sports joins us. Just getting into a little bit of some NFL news out there. You're seeing today that Trey Lance has a new home and going to the Chargers. At least it's, you know, nice scenery out there. We'll see what he can end up learning with under Harbaugh and Justin Herbert.
Good for him. Yeah, he's only a few years away from being a few years away, right? you know, he got replaced by Joe Milton. Right, and we were joking about Joe Milton. Like, people were trying to, you know, there's all these rumors like, oh, the Saints are thinking about trading Chris Olave, and oh, they could trade for Joe Milton.
I'm like,
what?
Chris Olave Joe for Milton? Milton? What?
What are you talking about? Like,
what else are we getting in return?
Yeah, it's just funny because Joe Milton, like, no one trades their backup quarterback quite like the Patriots trade their backup
quarterback.
Bravo
to them.
Right? Like, some teams will pull off a trade. You know, maybe, you know, you have a young guy overtake your starter, and, oh, let's trade that guy, right? Which is what the Patriots did way back in the day with Drew Bledsoe. But, like, that's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the Patriots trading quarterbacks. And I know we were talking about Trey Lance, but I just find this fascinating because you look at it and you say, okay, how many of these guys have been traded? Drew Bledsoe was the backup to Tom Brady when he got traded. Matt Cassel was the backup to Tom Brady, played in that year where Tom Brady got hurt. He got traded. Jacoby Brissett and Jimmy Garoppolo both ended up starting the year Tom Brady got suspended for Deflategate. Both ended up getting traded. Jimmy Garoppolo actually got traded to the 49ers, where Trey Lance actually was drafted to back up Jimmy Garoppolo. So, okay, fine. It comes around. Joe Milton now got traded. And also Ryan Mallett got traded as a Saints, at a Patriots backup, Ryan Mallett, okay. RIP. And, you know, Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett were on the same team. I couldn't remember which one of them got traded. It was Ryan Mallett.
You mentioned Mac Jones, too?
Mac Jones, I don't think, got traded.
He was just released and picked up some.
He may have been traded, but he was the starter. I don't think it doesn't count because he wasn't a backup when he got traded.
Right, right. Okay, I got you were going there.
Oh, I think they traded him. If they traded him, they traded him prior to him, to Drake May being
right
on the team. But he was traded. He was traded to Jacksonville for a 6th-round pick. And then they declined to pick up his 5th-year option. So, yeah, it's just kind of funny to me. The Patriots find a way to trade these guys. But, yeah, I mean, Joe Milton isn't a guy that's contending to start. Joe Milton is a guy that, you know, maybe you can, if the tush-push continues to be a thing, you can be like, yeah, go in there and run into the line. You're big, you're strong. We don't want our starting quarterback to get hurt. So, hey.
What's wild is Trey Lance, we still know nothing about this quarterback in the NFL.
We know he's not that good. You know,
right, he'd be starting.
I mean, I still believe that, like, the 49ers never wanted to draft him in the first place, and they just got kind of talked into it because they traded up. You know, we were talking about this before the show. Like, John Lynch gets so much credit for that draft class because he stumbled into one of the best draft picks of all time in Brock Purdy as Mr. Irrelevant, the last pick in the draft. And because of that, he gets talked about as like a genius. But
the Trey Lance mistake is washed away.
No one talks about the fact that he made one of the worst draft picks in NFL history prior to making one of the best draft picks in NFL history. Like, he bookended the draft with the complete opposite decision, because not only did he pick Trey Lance at number 2 overall, which in and of itself is a terrible draft pick, they traded up for it. Anyway, it's just so funny to me. Like, if you don't have to always be good. You just have to be good enough to make people forget about when you're bad. Because every GM's going to make bad picks.
Sure.
Every GM's going to have those, like, those Marcus Davenport situation type
picks. I was just going to go there. I'm like, right? You talk about a guy you traded up for that ended up being a big old bust.
Right.
Marcus Davenport.
The difference is the Saints did it in reverse. They had the star draft class, and then the next year they did the Marcus Davenport. So that was the lasting memory. If they had done Marcus Davenport prior and then had that 2017 draft class, we would just be talking about the 2017 draft class. But anyway, I digress. Trey Lance is just a fascinating case study in what happens. Zach Wilson, same situation, in what happens when you become enamored with arm talent and don't actually stop to thinking, like, is this guy a good quarterback? Because I don't think Trey Lance is a very good quarterback.
Speaking out, if he's going to be a good quarterback or not, we know whose pro day was today over at Colorado.
Mr. Sanders. You know, we're talking to Eric at home later in the show, and I'm curious what his takeaway is. Because to me, you know, Travis Hunter running routes, that's fun. Shedeur Sanders throwing the ball, that's fun. If I'm the Saints, and I am serious, and my finger is hovering over the button of drafting Shedeur Sanders at number 9, if he's there, my head coach is going to be at his pro day. Now, the Saints did have two coaches there. They had Scott Tolzien and they had Keith Williams. So,
But not Kellen Moore.
And, you know, it might be a scheduling thing. He did spend part of this week in Florida at the owners' meetings. He's a busy guy. Maybe he just couldn't figure it out. But I don't know. If I'm picking my next franchise quarterback, if he's there at 9 and I'm like, yeah, this is my guy.
Right. I'm going
to
be there.
I'm taking every opportunity to go scout this guy in person. So we'll see. But, I mean, you did send Scott Tolzien. So you are scouting the quarterback. You are scouting Shedeur Sanders. But what Kellen Moore not being there tells me is it may be more of a we're scouting him if he's on the board later on in the first or early on in the second where we might pick him. That's what it reads to me. Because, again, if you're drafting a guy at number 9, he's your franchise guy. And if you are considering taking a guy as your franchise quarterback, I think your head coach is going to be there. So, because, I mean, we saw him at a lot of other quarterback pro days. So I just think that's interesting.
And I know you've seen these mock drafts that keep coming out, and I feel like the big board kind of shifts every other week. And I guess that's normal, but for me to see Shedeur Sanders landing in round 2 of a lot of mock drafts now blows my mind, because I don't believe for one second that's going to happen.
There's a lot of this time of year where it's so much smoke screening and no one wants to be in the Saints position in 2017 when they got leapfrogged for Pat Mahomes, right? So
yeah.
you're going to project interest in basically everybody, but you're also not going to tip your hand on anybody. So, like, we'll see. I don't think we'll know until draft day where people really land on Shedeur. But I could definitely see him being the number 2 pick. I could definitely see him falling out of the first round. It's just a weird situation.
We're going to take a break. When we get back, Eric Edholm, lead draft writer for NFL Media, will help us break that all down with the QB situation for the Saints. Shedeur Sanders. Could it be Jackson Dart or someone else? Coming back with more sports talk right after this. Stay tuned on WWL.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Counting down to the NFL draft. We're just 3 weeks away, folks. Helping us break it all down, lead draft writer for NFL Media, Eric Edholm, now joins us on WWL. Eric, how's your Friday going? Thank you so much for joining us right now.
What's up, man?
Yeah,
Yeah, going pretty well. Watched the Colorado Pro Day today. Wrote a little something about that and getting ready for the weekend.
Well, perfect lead in then, because that's wanted to get into, yeah. Obviously, with Shedeur Sanders out there. There's been a little buzz around the Saints potentially being in the mix for the quarterback. But just curious for you, it seems like he has steadily been falling down draft boards, and just wondering your take on the QB overall.
Yeah, I don't see it quite that way. What I think is happening is the number of quarterback jobs that are open are finite, right? There's only so many teams that I think could really make a case for that, for using a high pick on a quarterback. The Browns and Giants have to be among them, more so the Browns, I would say, just because of Russell Wilson landing in New York. And, you know, you can obviously make a case for a team like New Orleans long-term. You know, if they really see something in Shedeur, he would have to be in play. Pittsburgh at 21, not knowing what Aaron Rodgers' decision is going to be. Those are some other teams that would make some sense. So I think it's more like he's falling in mocks, because it's hard to find the place where he's going to land. Is some team willing to trade up for a quarterback who, you know, if his last name was Johnson and not Sanders, not the Dion name that comes with it, I don't know that we'd be talking about his physical skills with awe. I think we'd say here's a tough, smart, accurate quarterback who can do a lot of good things in the NFL, but this is not the same level of prospect that we saw among the guys who went in the top 12 last year, all six of them at quarterback.
Yeah, I think you make a good point, because, like, you look at the draft, and it's very, you know, there are teams that need a quarterback, but they're all at the top, right? And if once you get into the teens, a lot of times in the draft you'll see, okay, once everyone passes on a guy once, you have to then come back around in the second round and be like, well, we didn't take him that first time, but do we like him enough to take him the second time? And a lot of times that's when you say no. And I think, you know, last year was a good example of Spencer Rattler falling all the way down to the fifth round when I think people would say, yeah, he's probably a second or third round talent. He just didn't get picked there. I'm just curious, like, what do you think the floor is for Shedeur? Because obviously it's not a fifth round guy, but where could you, like, how far could you potentially see him falling, in your opinion?
I would think the first couple of selections around two. And I would, you know, like, if you remember Will Levis when he came out a couple years ago, there were mock drafts. You could find them among respectable people, guys that I think do a really nice job covering the draft, saying maybe he goes to the Colts. You know, maybe he's a top five pick. I mean, the physical tools are there to work with. He's got some toughness. He's got some running ability. The arm talent is there. You know, it's a work in progress, but there was at least a feasible path towards him being a first-round selection. Now, he ended up going, I think, 33rd to the Titans. So that was a little bit of an unexpected fall. With Sanders, I think, in a little bit thinner of a quarterback class, we can kind of see that path happening, possibly. But again, there's several teams along the way, and I wouldn't even rule out the Jets. I would, you know, I don't know that they're a Shedeur team necessarily, but there's been some buzz with them on Jackson Dart. So it's even possible that Dart gets drafted ahead of Sanders, combining the two names there. But, I would say I don't know that that's the most likely scenario, but it's really a how you view each guy kind of scenario. So if the Jets likes Dart more, you know, that there's absolutely a chance that they could take him higher. So, yeah, I know that's a long-winded answer, but if he gets past three, you know, if he gets past the second and third picks, you know, there are really only so many stops along the train route where I think he could get off, barring a trade of some sort.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with you, because I look at the Browns at the top of the second round. Like, if he gets out of the first round and they don't pick a quarterback, and Cam Ward goes to the Titans at number one, they just don't like the value. That seems like it would make a lot of sense to me. But I think you're on the right track in terms of that value. Now, the other guy at the Colorado Pro Day that everyone's going to be talking about, you know, obviously he's got the cornerback skill set in Travis Hunter, but it's the route running, it's the receiver part of it. He went out there, he didn't wear gloves, which I find funny at your Pro Day. You go out there and you're like, hey, you know, if you drop a couple passes because you're not wearing gloves, it might reflect negatively, but, you know, he didn't do it. I'm just curious, what were your thoughts on Travis in general? And just, you know, is the receiver thing, is that something that a team is really going to value? Because I kind of look at it like, if you can't be a top five pick at at cornerback. I'm not taking him as a receiver just because I can play you on both sides of the ball. Like, I need you to be a top five player at one of those two things. Where do you see Travis at this point?
Yeah. This has been one of the more fun debates in this draft cycle, right? Is what position is he going to play? You know, he went to the combine and said, I want to play 100% at corner and 100% at receiver, and had a huge smile when he said it. So I think he's serious, but I think he also knows that maybe every NFL team doesn't share that same vision of his plan. So I think he's probably going to end up doing both. But to me, going out there, like you said, during the pro day, not doing DB drills, but running routes. And I don't think he was even expected to run routes in the first place. This was a change of plans at some point. He was sending a message. I want the ball in my hands in the NFL. To me, that spoke volumes. That was the biggest takeaway from the Hunter angle today. You know, all this talk about positional value, I think, is very real. And every team's going to have a slightly different vision or plan of what they want to do with Hunter if they get him. But I think there's been more momentum, I'll say, on the receiver side than I initially realized. I think, you know, talking to some people down in Mobile back in late January, early February, talking to people at the combine a couple weeks after that, a lot of people seem to think the cornerback thing made the most sense because, you know, maybe you can give him an offensive package, 20 plays a game or 15 or 10 or whatever it is, red zone, third down, you know, 2-minute drill, whatever it is, end of the half, you know, those situations, put him in there as a third or fourth receiver, another speed threat, boom, you know, instant offense, and play him full time as a corner. But since then, I've had conversations that made me think that, you know, the more easily translatable position right away could be receiver. And maybe you start him there and give him third down red zone duty on defense or something like that, or he's your fourth corner or what have you. And I don't know. I guess I've kind of had to rethink this thing a couple times now, but after today, like you said, he didn't drop any passes. The ball was sitting in his hands cleanly, even the ones that were out of his frame, low, high, behind him, catching him in stride, incredible footwork, you know, all the stuff that he displayed in a brilliant season as the Heisman Trophy winner. But, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if there's a little bit more receiver buzz than I initially anticipated.
Eric, curious for you, do you have a favorite player in this draft that you're looking at in round one, someone that you think is, you know, almost a can't-miss prospect for the NFL?
Yeah, this is a tough draft for me. I mean, obviously, Hunter and Abdul Carter, I think, are the two closest things to probably can't-miss guys, and maybe you throw in just the high floors and you know, relatively high ceilings, too, of guys like Tyler Warren, the tight end from Penn State, Ashton Jeanty, the running back. And, you know, I know there's been at least some talk in New Orleans. Could he be a fit there? I don't know that that's going to happen, but, you know, it's probably a name that's come up in chatter around there as well. I mean, those are probably the four that I think have the most surest paths to success, if you will. You know, there's an injury consideration with Carter that teams have to kind of work through and measure carefully and weigh the pros and cons of that and make sure that they sign off medically on him. You know, you're always going to want to do deep dives on character, but all those guys pretty much have, you know, great football character and personal character from what I'm aware of. Quarterback obviously carries a lot of risk, and this year is probably more so than others. So I would tend to go with one of those guys. I love Will Campbell from LSU. I don't care about the arm length. I think he's going to be fine. Play him at guard, play him at tackle. He wants to play tackle. You guys know. I mean, you know, as he said at the combine, if there's a choice between being the backup left tackle and the starting right guard, let me start at right guard. But he's got a chip on his shoulder. He handled SEC rushers with, you know, deftness and ease, I think, for most of his college career, what I saw anyway. So I'd give him a shot out there, and I think he's terrific. He and Membu from Missouri, I think, are, you know, really good blockers who should be the first two blockers taken in this draft. But, yeah, I mean, it's not a typical year where it's just teeming with blue-chip talent, but I think those six guys make the most sense as far as highest floors and also high ceilings as well.
Yeah, Will's also got a great Southern accent, so people will like him the same way they like Xavier Leggett when he showed up and started with his South Carolina thing. I noticed you wrote about Xavier today, and I know Dave Canales talked about Xavier in that Panthers locker room. I'm just curious in general with the Panthers, because I think they're the wild card in the NFC South, where it's this kind of really tamped down division. No one's super excited about any of those teams, but I think it has the potential to be really competitive this next season, especially if the Panthers build on what they were able to do at the end of last year. And obviously Xavier gets their big draft pick. They didn't have a first round pick. They traded back in to get Xavier. I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on that team in general and where that offense can go? Bryce Young, Xavier, some of these other guys.
Yeah, no, I think it's you know, Dave was obviously hired to get Bryce right, and it didn't look good early when he got benched. He gets back in the lineup, things start kind of clicking a little bit. So, you know, short of that development, I'd have major questions. Obviously, it'll be allowed the most NFL points in history in a season, granted 17 games, but, you know, it still holds up. They were a sieve on defense, so they've got to get that right. They didn't get Milton Williams. They even tried to make a trade for DK Metcalf. That didn't come through. But with Leggett and with a pretty good run game, I think they've solidified that offensive line a lot better than it was a couple years ago. You know, Dave Canales has done a nice job designing that offense, and I think they will be more proficient on that side of the ball. But, you know, short of them making some big strides defensively, there's going to be questions. Tampa's still going to be considered the better team. You know, Derek Carr's the more established quarterback. I mean, whatever you want to say, there's other things in the division that, you know, that could push past a Carolina team that isn't guaranteed to make defensive strides this year. So that's the biggest concern I think I have going into the draft for them.
You mentioned a little bit earlier about Russell Wilson joining the Giants. Also, now Jameis Winston over there seems like a comedy ready to be produced and happening. Hopefully, Hard Knocks ends up with the New York Giants this year. But do you feel like at number three overall, does that take away quarterback for the G-men?
Boy, I hope not. I'm praying that Shadur somehow ends up in that quarterback room and we get hammered. Like maybe Hard Knocks forget to take one down or something, you know, like that would be the perfect sort of spy on scene there. But yeah, no, I don't think it takes it away, because Russell's on a 1-year deal. You know, Jameis is on a 2-year deal at modest money. Tommy DeVito's the only other guy on the roster. I think what it does is it prevents them from panicking, having to reach for that pick and say, all right, we have to come out of this draft with somebody who could start this year for us. I think that's what it takes away from them. But they've done plenty of work on Shadur. They know him. He and Malik Nabers have talked. I mean, there's plenty of connections there, so I wouldn't rule that out. It just removes the need to play him right away. Jackson Dart, same thing. You know, whether you're talking a more established or veteran guy, I guess, like Tyler Shuck, or do you kind of roll the dice on a Jalen Milroe or somebody like that in round three or whatever? I think they're still in the quarterback business, but I think it prevents them from having to reach on a pick or having to feel bad about having to pass on somebody like Travis Hunter, let's say. So it just reduces the urgency to get somebody in there very high in the draft. But I still think they'll be all ears. I think they'll be listening for opportunities. I think they'll have enough flexibility to kind of look around the draft, and if somebody tempts them, they'd be willing to pounce.
Yeah, okay. I have one other question, and this is kind of going back to Travis Hunter, Shadur Sanders, and it just, you know, when I look at, like, okay, Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow and the success they've had, and I think teams have started to kind of look at that. If you're the Browns and you're taking Travis Hunter at number two, are you then trying to move heaven and earth to go up and get Shadur? Because to me, that would be the recipe to maximize Travis.
Man, you're going to get Browns fans all worked up.
I'm just curious, where would you land on that? Because to me, it almost makes too much sense.
I part of your question cut out, and I apologize. I think what you were saying is, do they want to try to double dip, you mean? And
if you're the Browns and you take Travis Hunter at number two, would you then be kind of like trying to move heaven and earth to bring in Shadur wherever you can get him? Because to me, that would make a lot of sense, and it would kind of mirror the Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, Ohio connection that's going on at the other part of the state.
Yeah, I mean, obviously these days especially, you know, you'd love to get guys who've had this time spent together at two different schools. They've got a connection. If you're going to play them on offense, right, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, throw him in there with Malik Nabers too if he's in New York, or if it happens in Cleveland, you know, that would be fascinating as well too. So, yeah, I think there is some possibility for that happening. I mean, as I kind of wrote today in my Colorado write-up, is that, you know, the Browns and Giants are really well repped at these things. Other teams, you know, sent a lot of people. You don't really know who they're looking at, right? I mean, they could be looking at Hunter, Sanders, or both. So, yeah, that possibility exists for a team to bring in both guys. They work well together. They have a rapport, clearly. You know, it would certainly speed up the chemistry angle a little bit as far as, you know, receiver and quarterback knowing what each other like. So, yeah, I mean, I think I would certainly endorse it. I mean, Hunter, it's amazing to think that he could be the highest rated corner and receiver in this draft. Given the nature of both positions, you know, where Will Johnson's been hurt, and, you know, Tedroy McMillan may come with some speed questions. Is Matthew Golden a complete receiver? I think you could make that case and not be going out on a limb. So, yeah, I think it absolutely is a possibility.
Check out Eric's write-up on the Colorado Pro Day at NFL.com and all his work as well. Always appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining us, and I'm sure we'll get with you, too, right before the draft ends up kicking off. Thanks a lot, Eric.
Sounds good. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Manny, too.
Eric Edholm, lead draft writer for NFL Media, joined us there. We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk and return with more right after this on WWL. Besides Saints football, LSU everything, and Pelicans basketball, WWL is also your home for March Madness. NCAA Men's Final Four, going to be exciting with four number one seeds playing. Our coverage will tip off tomorrow at 2 o'clock with the Final Four show, followed by pregame show, then game number one, Florida at Auburn, against Auburn, at 5:09, then followed by game two, Duke versus Houston at 7:49 p.m. All the excitement right here on WWLAMFM.com and, of course, the free Odyssey app. Next hour, we're coming up after the news break. We'll help us break down the Final Four. Cameron Salerno, college football and basketball writer at CBS Sports. And then LSU baseball taking on Oklahoma, 6 o'clock, 6:30, first pitch, right here on WWL. Be back after news. Who dat, folks? Welcome into our Friday Power Hour here on Sports Talk. Going to get with you about the NCAA tournament after the first break. Cameron Salerno, college football and basketball writer at CBS Sports, will join us, helping us break down that Final Four as we trudge to the Game 2 matchup. LSU baseball playing at Oklahoma, a 6:30 first pitch, 6 o'clock pregame coverage coming up on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. NOLA.com's Cokie Riley on the scene there in Oklahoma saying he's been getting a lot of questions about the weather, so here's your update. It's drier and even a tad warmer than it was yesterday, around an hour and a half before first pitch. Wind is blowing in from center field again, so like I was kind of saying, I don't expect a lot of balls to be flying out the yard tonight.
Yeah, we'll see. I want to talk about basketball. We already talked about baseball. Let's talk about basketball. Who's your pick? So we got Duke versus Houston,
right?
Houston, and then Florida versus Auburn.
SEC versus SEC.
Who are your picks? Who are your picks?
I have in the championship game, Duke taking on Florida. Two of the, I felt like, the best teams all season long.
Yeah, that's my pick too. I think Duke is better than everybody else.
Yeah,
like I genuinely do. And it's tough because they played in the ACC all year, so you didn't get to see them play the SEC teams. You know, everyone talking about the SEC and how great the conference was. I think the top six.
You did not feel that way.
I didn't. I felt like the top five, six plus Arkansas were good, and that's kind of what we saw in the tournament. Some of those teams that probably shouldn't have been in, they got boat raced. Whereas, like, you know, these top teams are good. And they propped up the rest of the conference. Like, Texas shouldn't have been in at all. Georgia probably shouldn't have been in. You know, Ole Miss probably should have been lower. But, you know, actually, no, I meant not Ole Miss. Missouri should have been lower. They got half the name right. But I think Auburn is going to have a real tough time because I don't buy that John I. Broome is healthy.
See, I think Auburn could keep this game pretty tight against Florida.
I think they would have a really good chance if John A. Broome is 100%. I just don't buy that he is. I think that that elbow is going to be a problem, and
give
they're playing
some magic juice and put him out there.
Yeah, he's going to play. Like, there's no consideration in sitting. And here's the thing: he's not really a pro prospect, right? He's one of these guys who's professional college basketball player and whatever. So he'll play through an injury that he might aggravate worse. But I just don't see, like, if he's not playing at a, if he's trying to hide that elbow, which is what he did when he came back in against Michigan State, he was trying to play with one hand. He made that three. He was kind of like the, you know, the spirit person for that. You know, he got everyone fired up by coming back in the game at all,
right,
and playing with that elbow, but you could tell he wasn't right, and then he bricked two free throws. So we'll see. And I don't know, Florida hasn't looked that good either. Like, I felt a lot more confident on Florida early in the tournament than I did watching them, like,
right,
you know, Clayton bailed them out against Texas Tech to a degree that I can only compare him to Shabazz Napier when he won the title with UConn, of like, that guy's just not going to let you lose if he has any say in it whatsoever. That three he hit where, you know, he kind of got cut off in the lane. He just dribbled out and took kind of a turnaround three to take the lead late in that game. Like, that's, he will single-handedly win you games. But they haven't looked like the team that I saw dominating the SEC either.
That's why I feel like Auburn may be heating up at the right time.
Auburn has the horses. They have the athletes,
yeah,
right? And that's what, you know, I don't know if UConn didn't have that. Texas Tech, I don't even feel like had that, which is, it's just kind of wild to watch Texas Tech win a game in the fashion they did against Arkansas, which was coming back from 10 down in the final, like, 4 minutes, and then lose a game against Florida, which is blowing a 10-point lead in the final 4 minutes. But I just feel like whoever it is going to lose to Duke by 20. I really do.
As far as Houston, I just feel like you talk about NBA talent. Duke's got it, and Houston doesn't.
Houston has a couple players that I think are going to be role players on an NBA team, but yeah, they don't have stars. They don't have the stars. If they can shut down Cooper Flagg, if Tugler can kind of take him out of his game a little bit, maybe if they can keep that score low like they were able to do in the last round, you know, keep it in the 60s. Like they did against Tennessee. Just, you know, Houston is one of the few teams in the entire college ranks right now who's just able to, like, shut your water off entirely, right? Florida's like that too. Florida has moments where it's like you can't score on them. And that's where, you know, it's like Alabama. Oh, how do you beat Alabama? Well, if they don't make a three for the entire first half, you're going to beat Alabama, right? Now, if Houston can do that again to Duke and shut them down from the perimeter and force them to play a two-point game, they have a chance, but I don't see that happening.
Want to check in on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Our buddy from Jimmy from Gretna is on the line. What you got for us tonight, Jimmy?
Hey, what's up, dude? Look, I'm stuck in a little bit of traffic here. I was thinking of going to Kid Rock and Nickelback tonight in Baton Rouge, but I did a U-turn, and I'm sticking with my roots. I'm going to the Croatian Fest in Belchase tonight and tomorrow, and I want to tie this into sports.
Okay.
Not only do I want to invite you guys, all right, Steve and Jeff and Charlie working the boards, invite you guys to the Croatian Fest this weekend. It's from tonight, 6 to 9 in Belchase, free admission. Tomorrow all day till 9 p.m. in Belchase. Come on out. Come get some oysters. If you say the three letters, WWL, you're taken care of. You understand?
Heard that.
All right, and let me tie this into sports. I talked to my Croatian brother, Carlo Makovic, who's nice. Been doing really well with the Pelicans. And, yes, he's playing tonight against the LeBron, LeBou, Luka Doncic, another former Yugoslavian brother, and they're playing a late game, but he's taking the red eye back to New Orleans. He's going to be at the Croatian Fest tomorrow at 5:30. So anybody, even if you're not Croatian, come on out, come to the West Bank, come to Plaquemines Parish, come get some oysters, come meet Carlo Makovic. You guys, y'all are good. Y'all are going to be VIP. If you're WWL, you're VIP. For everybody else, come on out. Carlo's going to be there after the game tonight. I want to get your take on the game tonight. One, are y'all going to stay up to watch it? And, you know, at this point, what do we do? Obviously, we're shelving players. And, you know, obviously if we lose the rest of our games, ideally it might bump us up to, what, 4 or 5 in the draft? Or do you think we still have a shot at the top three?
Real quickly, Jimmy, I want to know from you, though, besides oysters, what are some Croatian fare? Oh, he dropped that. I was going to say, what else is there to eat
Charlie
at the Croatian
had no
fest?
Interest in that answer to your question.
That was not me.
Charlie's like, I didn't dump him.
He's like, oh, I can't get into this. No. You know, it's I answer his question. Are you going to stay up late and watch the Lakers play the Pelicans, the barn burner of a game?
I'll definitely have the game on. I don't know if I'll be, like, glued to the TV watching it, but at least, if nothing, it'll help me doze off.
The spread's 15.
Oof.
I expect them to be down by 20 at halftime, and I expect them to be down by 40 by the end of the fourth quarter. That's... They're not going to be competitive in this game. The Lakers are on the second night of a back-to-back. Sure, they might be tired, but they lost last night. Typically, if I'm going to use the back-to-back as my, oh, this is going to give them, you know, they're going to have an advantage. It's going to be against a team that won last night because they might, you know, now it's like, well, they're in a playoff race. They do need to actually kind of keep winning these games to make sure they get home court advantage and whatnot. And, you know, they're going to win that game by 30. It's just, these are the games that the Pelicans want to lose, and they're going to lose them by a wide margin.
Yeah, the roster's decimated right now. If they're not sitting guys, they're just banged up. And, you know, do we even want to see the Pelicans pulling out wins right now? The answer is definitely no. We don't want to damage any more of those lottery balls that might be a potential to land that top overall pick. I know they're not considered, you know, the favorites at this point due to their record, but you never know the luck, the way those lottery balls fall in the past. They've been good to the Pelicans, so there's still that chance of that number one overall pick.
And if you're wondering, like, oh, are the Lakers really pushing toward the finish line either? Like, you look at the Western Conference standings.
It's jumbled up there.
And, well, yeah, it's locked up at the top,
right,
in the Thunder. They have a 14.5 game lead on two, so they could coast to the end of the, like, so if it was against the Thunder and you're like, oh, maybe they'll rest the players, whatever. Not going to happen with the Lakers, because you're talking about, they're the 4 seed right now. They're a half game back of the Nuggets. So for the 3 seed, which that's a big difference, right?
Right.
This is a team you might end up playing, and you want to get game 7 at home. So finishing ahead of them would make a difference. But then you look behind that and you say, okay, the Lakers 46-30, they are only 2 games up on the 8 seed, which is the Clippers at 44-32. So if they drop a couple of these games, they could end up in the play-in. They could go from the 4 seed or the 3 seed all the way to the play-in, and that's not right where you want to be. So, I mean, these games are important to the Lakers. They dropped a game to the Warriors last night, and they are not going to be eager to lose another game. So, I don't know. I think it's funny, because where the Pelicans are right now, you know, the more interesting games are the games against, you know, the Spurs and the Trailblazers and the Jazz and the Hornets, because those are games that, you know, both teams really aren't trying to win. So at least they'll be close. And then you come down to it and say, okay, who actually wants to win this game? And the answer is usually going to be Jose Alvarado desperately wants it. Like Jose Alvarado, say what you want about him, he's in the NBA because he tries real,
and he
real
cares
hard.
Not about lottery picks.
He tries real, real hard, and he tries real, real hard all the time. Sound like Charles Barkley there a little bit. And so, like, when you're talking about, oh, okay, we don't really want to win these games, but we have to put somebody out there. The problem is, when you put Jose Alvarado out there, he's going to find a way to win you that game, because that's what he does. That's why they beat the Hornets the other night, because Jose was out there and he's like, all right, someone's got to win it. It's going to be me. Anyway.
Yeah, we saw them lose pretty, you know, it wasn't a close game against the Clippers the other night, and I'm not expecting that to be the same kind of this evening against the Lakers. Staying in LA, I guess that was the bonus part of this trip for them.
These guys are going out there, they're going to play hard, right? They're going to shoot threes. Antonio Reeves.
I forget who put it out, but yeah, there's been like there was a list of ethical tanking, and then people have just been horrible and just disgusting at the way they've been tanking, and the Pels are definitely in that ethical tanking list.
Yeah, like, to unethically tank, you would have to just be a bad team and be like, yeah, okay, let's move it on. Like,
the when Wizards.
Unethically tanking is, hey, we actually have star players, but we're shutting them down.
You know.
Utah, yeah, like
76ers.
Yeah, I mean, like the Hornets taking Miles Bridges out after the third quarter. Like, come on.
Well, we're going to get into basketball, where the guys are trying the Final Four coming up Saturday. You can hear it right here on WWL. We're going to talk to Cameron Salerno, college football and basketball writer at CBS Sports, right after the break. Stay tuned here on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, March Madness will start tomorrow for WWL Final Four action. Going to be exciting. Coverage starting 2 o'clock with the Final Four show. Game 1, Florida versus Auburn at 5:09, followed by Game 2, Duke versus Houston at 7:49. AMFM.com and the free Odyssey app. Helping us break down the action, college football and basketball writer at CBS Sports, Cameron Salerno, joins the radio huddle. Cam, how you doing this morning? Well, this afternoon, I should say.
I'm doing great. It's almost the Final Four. I mean, I think it's the best Final Four of the century. I mean, just a loaded field. I mean, it's so rare you get the best four teams in the final weekend of the NCAA tournament. So it's going to be a blast. I'm really excited to watch. And, you know, just as a college basketball fan in general, like, it's just going to be an exciting weekend for the sport. And just so much star talent, so many storylines. I know I've been told by a lot of my friends who are just casual basketball fans, like, they don't really like the tournament this year just because of all the chalk. But I think it just, as you go on, the more chalk you get, the better storylines and games you get down the stretch.
Yeah, I think maybe it's just a San Antonio thing, because in 2008 they were in San Antonio and all four one seeds made it back then. So next time we're in San Antonio, everyone pick all the one seeds. But yeah, I do find it interesting because, and I do think it is directly related to NIL and a lot of the mid-major stars getting poached and transferring into the bigger programs, like Jonna Broome, for example. You know, he transferred in to Auburn 2 years ago, and it's no coincidence that suddenly he's, you know, Player of the Year candidate. But, you know, I guess, do you miss the upsets? I think there is kind of a thing, something to be said for, hey, okay, a lot of these, there's fewer upsets, which means we get chalk, which means we get the ones playing the twos and then the ones playing the ones in the Final Four. But my only issue is when the one versus two matchup isn't fun, then you lose that Cinderella story, and then you don't even get that matchup, and you see Alabama can't throw a rock in the ocean if they're standing on the beach. Tennessee did the exact same thing. I think I just worry that, like, the earlier rounds of the tournament, you kind of lose something from.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's definitely a point to it. I mean, I think people gravitate towards upsets because I would say a majority of the people who watch March Madness aren't diehard fans of the teams that are playing, you know, like, for me, like, I grew up in Sacramento, so there wasn't really, like, NorCal college basketball wasn't really a huge deal. But, like, I always just love watching, like, the upsets and the Cinderella stories that come about it, because you remember them for years and years. Like, I'll remember Loyola Chicago. I'll remember St. Peter's. I'll remember, you know, some of these teams have just made an improbable run. But then the only bad thing is, you know, once you get to, like, the Elite Eight, which happened to St. Peter's, and St. Peter's went on a remarkable run a few years ago. I think they lost to North Carolina, I think, by 20, 25 points. But in your defense, too, I mean, the Tennessee-Houston game wasn't close either. So, it was kind of disappointing to see this year. Like, I mean, I don't buy that the Cinderella is dead, quote-unquote, because I still think there are teams that are capable of making runs. So I wouldn't make it a big deal. I think, you know, maybe this year wasn't really a lot of upsets. But then also I think it kind of speaks to how strong the top of the college basketball, or how strong the top of the teams in college basketball are. Just because, you know, making the Final Four, I think, is one of the hardest things to do in sports. Because, I mean, obviously in the NBA playoff format, like, you can have a bad game and lose and still win a series. But if you have a bad game in the NCAA tournament and you're a really good team, like, there's a strong chance you're going home, unless you have a remarkable comeback by, like, Texas Tech did against Arkansas, or Florida did against Texas Tech. So I don't think Cinderella's dead, but I definitely think there is something to it that, you know, unless you're like, I mean, I love college basketball. I think there's a lot of people who are going to tune in for various reasons. Either, you know, you just watch the Final Four because you love basketball, or, you know, you're a fan of a team that's tanking and you want to see who the best NBA draft prospects are. So I think the Final Four this year has something for everybody. I think people still enjoy it regardless.
Yeah, I guess, like, I think what we lose now, and we lose in this era, is like the Kenneth Faried, right? Like, you look at Morehead State. And Kenneth Faried made Morehead State relevant. One of the reasons was Kenneth Faried played his entire college career at Morehead State. Would Morehead State be an NCAA tournament darling if they had Jonna Broome still on Morehead State rather than on Auburn? I just think that's, to me, that is the biggest paradigm shift, is that fourth-year player who would lead that mid-major team to the upsets because they have that veteran player. I mean, Auburn's starting five is older than the Oklahoma City Thunder's starting five. Like, that's, I mean, we don't need to belabor this point, but, you know, it's just, I do miss that. At the same time, like you said, we get this matchup of four number one seeds. And so, I mean, yeah, we do kind of all get to benefit from that. And I think it's almost like, hey, if you, the attention goes a little bit more from the craziness of the first weekend to the exciting actual blue blood matchups of the final weekend. And so let's just kind of look forward to that. What are your thoughts on these two matchups coming up tomorrow?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think there's answer that question, I think there's a mix of everything. Because in 2023, we had kind of all like the most random teams in the Final Four. I wouldn't say random, but I mean, UConn, Miami, and you know, just it was just teams that you wouldn't expect. I mean, San Diego State, FAU, like teams that were quote-unquote all Cinderellas. So it's kind of cool to have that mix of Cinderella and elite team. But as far as the matchups this week, I mean, I'm really excited about both. I mean, I got to see Florida play last week at the West Regional. That's what the that's where I was at. I really love their team. I think they have one of the best front courts, like just as far as depth in the entire country. And then Jani Broome is just an incredible player. Like, he's someone who was obviously in the running for National Player of the Year with Cougar Flag. And I really like the Auburn team. I know they played earlier this season and Florida upset Auburn on the road. So that's going to be a really fun matchup. Then also, too, Houston versus Duke. I mean, talk about a nice way to end the night. I mean, this was a game that was played last year and Duke beat Houston in the Sweet 16 upset. But in that game, Jamal Shedd got hurt, and that kind of really flipped the script. But, I mean, I think I still like both matchups a lot. I think I'd probably pick Duke and Florida. Those are the picks I made in our extra picks. I think that'd be a great title matchup between Duke and Florida.
Is there anything that, you know, I feel like Auburn has the better shot of pulling one out against, you know, in this matchup, over than Houston over Duke kind of thing, but just curious what you've seen out of Auburn down the stretch. They've definitely looked to be coming alive in the tournament, whereas Florida, they've still been a really good team, but maybe not as dominating.
Yeah, I mean, I think Auburn kind of down the stretch, you know, had just a late season. I wouldn't say collapse at all, because that's not the right word, but they kind of, you know, they weren't strong down the stretch. I mean, they lost to Texas A&M, they lost to Alabama, and then they lost in the SEC tournament before the championship game. So they kind of went to the tournament losing three out of the last four games, which, you know, no champion has ever done. So that'd be pretty wild to see. But Florida, I think, has been really dominant the last month. I mean, I think they've been, you know, arguably the best team in college basketball outside of Duke, maybe, just as far as how well they played. I just think they have the perfect mix of, you know, obviously experience and depth and star power. Walter Clayton Jr. is just an absolute star. Like, he is someone who has really elevated his game. And he's also, like you said, another mid-major guy. He started at Iona under Rick Pitino and really has developed at Florida and become an All-American. And, you know, Elijah Martin is another guy, too. I mean, he played at FAU, and he's going to be the first player tomorrow to start the Final Four for two different teams, which is just incredible. And I don't think he's going to be the last player to do so, especially in the transfer portal era. But I really love their front court. I mean, Alex Condon is an incredible big man. And then obviously Thomas Hauck is someone who comes off the bench and I think would be a starter for most Power Six programs, but he's just so good. And Florida's front court is so good. He comes off the bench and plays a critical role. So I think Florida has been really, really good down the stretch. I mean, they kind of survived against UConn, who I think is, you know, still – I don't think their seat line did them justice. I mean, they're still the two-time reigning national champions until, you know, obviously the team wins on Monday. And then Texas Tech, who I think was really, really good, and they easily could have won that game, but, you know, faltered down the stretch, and Florida was able to win that game. So I still like Florida in this one, but I wouldn't be surprised if Auburn gave them a game as well.
I agree with you. UConn got hosed, but that's neither here nor there. You know, and like you mentioned, you know, that 2023 Florida Atlantic team is fascinating to me because, you know, you look at, you know, John L. Davis was point guard on that team. He was the point guard for Arkansas. Vlad Goldin, center on that team. He's the center for Michigan. Elijah Martin, as you mentioned, shooting guard on that team. He's now the shooting guard for Florida. So it is kind of fascinating. And yeah, and like you mentioned, Walter Clayton from Iona going there. So, you know, you get really good teams out of it, which is why it's kind of fascinating to look at Duke on the other side. and you see Cooper Flagg and Con Knipple and these guys. And I kind of feel like the best player in the country is also on the best team in the country, independent of the best player in the country. And, you know, because you look at, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen in college a 6'10 guy throwing lobs to a 7'2 guy the way Flagg yeah. and Mollock does. And it's fascinating to watch. And I watch Cooper at Duke and I see Luka Doncic. Like, that's the only player I can compare him to with the skill set that he has at the size that he plays at. And I don't know, if people haven't spent enough time watching Cooper Flagg, to me it's like you are missing out, because he is a superstar who's about to go into a league of superstars, and to me he's going to hold his own immediately. I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on Cooper in terms of his season? Obviously the ACC didn't give much of a competition to really weigh yeah. against like the SEC might have, but he's stunning to watch.
No, I agree with you 100%. I think Cooper, if Duke wins the national title on Monday, I think Duke, or he has a case as the best one and done prospect of the modern college basketball era. I mean, I think the number one player right now is Anthony Davis, who just had an incredible season at Kentucky, won a national title, won National Player of the Year. But I think if Cooper wins a national title with Duke, I think he would be number one in my book. But I mean, he's a generational player. I know that term kind of gets thrown around there a little bit, but I think he's the best college prospect since Anthony Davis. Like, he is, I think, a better prospect than any, you know, player in the last 10 years. I mean, outside of Wemby, who just is a player of his own. Like, he just one-on-one, you can't compare him. But Cooper is an incredible player. The team that wins the draft lottery, I think, should be celebrating for the next, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks, because they're going to have a player who can transform their franchise for the next decade. So I think he's a phenomenal player. I think he can do a little bit of everything. Like, I think coming into the season, there's questions about maybe his offensive game. A lot of people, you know, saw how good he was as a defensive prospect and on the AAU circuit in high school. But I think what's really stood out this season, just how much he's improved offensively. Like, his self-creation has improved. His three-point shooting has improved. His free throw percentage has improved. He can facilitate for his teammates. And then obviously the defense speaks for itself. Like, he's a terrific rim protector, and like, it just, he's an incredible player. Like, there's not going to be players like him every year, but I will say the next year's class is going to be really, really fun to watch too. 2026 is another class to watch if you're a fan of a tanking team. So Cooper's had an incredible season, but I think when it's all said and done, he might go down as the best one-done prospect ever.
Cameron, sticking with Cooper Flagg, is there, you think, anything to the rumors that he could possibly decide to stay at Duke for another season, or is that just a whole lot of horse honky?
There's absolutely zero chance he's coming back to Duke next year.
Okay.
If Cooper Flagg comes back to Duke, give it. Someone should get $1 million. Like, if there's 0.0000000% chance he's come back to Duke next year, he's a surefire number one pick. Like, there's no way. I know that Athletic article dropped, you know, about maybe a month and a half ago about how he, you know, would like to come back or something. I don't want to have his exact quote in front of me, but
right.
There's zero chance he's coming back. Like, I mean, there's absolutely zero chance. It's a fun thing to maybe talk about, but there's zero chance he comes back to school next year.
Yeah, I mean, like, in the NIL era, it becomes an actual possibility in the sense that, well, he's going to make a ton of money either way. But, like, this idea is like, oh, well, he doesn't want to play for the Hornets or the Wizards or whatever. It's like, you want to be the number one pick in the draft, you're going to go play for a bad team. That's just how it works. Like, that's the deal.
Well, the other part of it, too, is the sooner you get into the NBA, the sooner you can start your timeline to get the second contract,
right.
Which is, I think that's what it's all about. Like, you want to get to the NBA as quickly as possible if you're someone who can be a supermax earner one day, which I think Cooper has definitely the potential to be. I mean, if you're like a fringe prospect who may be a day one pick, maybe probably a day two pick, then yeah, you probably should go back to school because you probably get more money. But for guys like Cooper and the prospects who are just no-brainer top five picks who are going to get that second contract one day, the sooner you start that timeline, the better.
Real quick, before we let you run, Cameron, I wanted to hop in here and ask you about Kelvin Sampson, who, you know, listen, I saw a stat that he's basically two wins away from 800 in his career. And I mean, wow. What's a better way to celebrate that than your first NCAA tournament championship? But just the culture that's been established at Houston, I know that obviously they're underdogs to Duke. Duke's got basically three top 10 picks on that roster. But there's also something to be said about, you know, Houston and what Kelvin Sampson's kind of instilled in that program of toughness and grit and everything like that.
Man, how can you not? If you're just a neutral college basketball observer, how can you not like Houston? Like, I love the program that Kelvin's built there. Like, they just are the definition of toughness. Like, they are the number one defensive team in the country in some statistics, but they also are the number one three-point shooting team in the country, which is a pretty wild combination to have, you know, defense and three-point shooting on your roster. But yeah, I think Kelvin just one of the most underappreciated coaches in this generation. Like, I think he is very much appreciated, but he deserves a lot more love. Like, the program he's built at Houston has just been remarkable to watch, and win a national title, I think, would do just wonders for his overall resume. But I think when it's all said and done, he should be a Hall of Famer no matter or what, but just an incredible coach and just an incredible person. Like, he just seems like someone who just has built programs and he cares about his kids, and it's really cool to watch. So I think who, honestly, the storylines, I think what the coolest part about it is too is, like, someone is going to win their first national title, like Bruce Pearl. Auburn has never won a national title. Florida obviously has won a national title, but Todd Golden as a coach or head coach hasn't won one. John Shire won a national title as a player, but hasn't won one as a head coach. Same with Kelvin Sampson. So I think it's really cool that that's going to be, you know, the histories. I mean, we do have blue bloods obviously in the Final Four, but it's definitely going to be a first time for somebody. So really cool. And yeah, Kelvin's just an awesome coach and an awesome person. So it'd be cool to see him win one.
Yeah. Just make sure you don't mispronounce Gonzaga around him. That'll set him off.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, don't get on Kelvin Sampson's bad side for sure.
Cameron, thanks so much for the time. Before we let you go, is there any kind of game time snack that's a must for you while watching basketball?
Oh, that's a great question. I like the barbecue Fritos. You mostly can get them at a gas station. I think those are the best snacks. I like chocolate over sour, like candy. But I would say if you're going to the gas station, you'll get a pack of barbecue Fritos.
Awesome stuff, Cam. Thanks so much for joining us, and enjoy the games.
Thank you. You guys too.
Thanks, Cameron Salerno, college football and basketball writer at CBS Sports, joining us there. Check out those barbecue Fritos. I can highly recommend them as well.
I cannot
have yet to have them.
Can neither confirm nor deny that.
We're gonna take a break, have some barbecue Fritos, and be back with more sports talk right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Welcome into the triple option feature brought to you by Bet365, and we're gonna get into what Charlie, Jeff, and I have to think today. For me, gentlemen, I'm going to go first up. Going back to Colorado's Pro Day, checking in on Shedeur Sanders. We saw him actually complete 58 of 63 passes during the workout. Three of the incompletions, though, were drops by wide receivers. Of course, we know everything is set up for these guys to succeed at their Pro Day. And there's been some, I guess, concern maybe for some Houdats. Like, if the Saints were to happen to get in the mix for Shedeur Sanders, would it be a big issue to him or his family, a guy like Deion Sanders, about joining the black and gold? Would he have a, you know, throw a fit or refuse to come to New Orleans if the Saints were going to draft him? Well, when asked after Colorado's Pro Day, Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, was asked, what do you think of the opportunity at Shedeur possibly going to the New Orleans Saints?
I like the colors, I like the city, I like the food, I like the people, I like the possibilities.
Likes the possibilities, pretty straight and simple there. Likes the food, likes the colors, likes the people. So doesn't seem at least the Sanders family would have an issue if the Shedeur ended up getting drafted by New Orleans.
Who doesn't like the food? I mean, come on.
Apparently, Travis Kelce said he didn't like brown things.
That's true. And Amari Cooper said he didn't like the smell.
Boo.
So.
Next up on our triple option, we're going to go to Charlie in the booth. What you got for us, Charlie?
Guys, I'm going with Cooper Flagg. We just talked with Cameron Salerno about him potentially being the best one and done ever. He was named the AP Player of the Year today. 18.9 points per game, 7.5 rebounds per game, 4.2 assists per game. And this is the stat from Bleacher Report. Flagg joins Zion Williamson, Anthony Davis, and Kevin Durant as the only freshman to win the award. That's a pretty good company, gentlemen. So Cooper Flagg going to be the 101 this year and have a very long and successful NBA career. But first and foremost, we'll see if he can win the NCAA tournament and cut down the nets.
Yeah, and hoping that the Pels, by chance and the magic of those lotto balls, end up getting that first overall pick so we can have a whole flag ceremony here, I guess you would call it.
Nice. Raise the flag. I dig it. There's a lot of puns with the flag game, I'm just saying.
Well, we had a lot of puns with...
Fun with flags? No. anyway. We'd have to get multiple members of the Flag family to call it Fun with Flags.
We had a lot of puns with Ian Book, but they didn't quite work out.
Yeah, the book's closed. It's closed officially on Ian's.
Is it my turn? Jeff, close us out here on Triple Option for the day.
All right. Well, I do want to give... We had a caller earlier who wanted to give a shout-out to Anissa Morrow, but he never got on the air. So I'll give a shout-out to Anissa Morrow. She made another All-American team today. Her career at LSU is over, but she averaged 18.7 points, 13.5 rebounds, and you know LSU did Elite Eight for the second year in a row. It's kind of become expected to get to the Elite Eight. You don't get to the Final Four. Kim Mulkey's going to be mean to you if you try to pretend that's not an accomplishment. Well, whatever. Anissa Morrow, you know, for a 6'1 post player to average 13.5 rebounds, like 6'1, you know, it sounds big, but you know you go up against these girls, like UCLA girls, like what, 6'8, you know, like she was impressive. And you know, I think she's going to be overshadowed by like what Angel Reese accomplished, but you know, I think Anissa Morrow had a great career at LSU. She showed up from DePaul, she completely changed her game, you know, and two Elite Eight runs. Like, it's easy to look at them like, well, they didn't win a championship, but go back 5 years and tell me going to the Elite Eight is not this massive accomplishment for the LSU women's basketball team. And her being there as that anchor in the post was a big part of that. So congrats to Anissa and a great career at LSU.
And curious to see how Kim Mulkey reloads for next year's Tiger squad. That was a wrap on today's Bet365 Triple Option feature. Getting ready for LSU baseball pregame coverage starting 6 o'clock right here on WWL. First pitch at 6:30 in Oklahoma, seeing if the Tigers can take game two and therefore taking the series against the Sooners. Also later this evening, we've got Pelicans in action at the LA Lakers. That is a 9 o'clock pregame coverage, which a 9:30 tip-off at the Lake Show. I was going to say the Staples Center, but I know that's no longer the case anymore. What is that, Crypto Arena?
Crypto.com arena, baby.
Taking over the naming rights.
Yeah. Which, yeah, I mean, based on how the economy's going, it might be the only way to pay for stuff pretty soon. I don't know.
When you look at this Pelicans team down the stretch, obviously the only thing to, I guess, be enamored with and looking forward to seeing at this point is just some of these young guys continuing to develop. Have you seen anything? Unfortunately, I know your UConn boy, Jordan Hawkins, has been out with a back issue, but any of these young guns stood out for you this season?
No. I mean, Olynyk, I think, is a quality player. You might bring him back. I like Bruce Brown, but like, yeah, there's not young players. Antonio Reeves, I think these last few games are going to be important. I want to see him kind of develop into a reliable scorer, maybe facilitator, maybe play on the ball a little more. Last couple of games, I've just watched him go stand in the corner and be bored. So I don't know. I'd like to see him get more involved, but it's just tough. It's tough to get excited about anything.
From me, Jeff, and Charlie, hope everybody has a great weekend. We'll be talking to all you on Monday, Championship Monday, that is, as we get ready to see who will be cutting down the nets on a national championship. Coming up next, though, some LSU baseball, game two of their series at Oklahoma. Stay tuned right here on WWL. Have a great weekend, everyone. Peace out.